John Richards, real 8.
Right, while I was at Southend, I was sent for intelligence people to report to Hobart House near Victoria for an interview. I went into Hobart House, I was told to go upstairs. There were several of us sitting there waiting. I had to go into an office with a sheet of paper, I had to do some translation. And it's some writing, and I was asked some questions about my family. Of course, a lot of them I couldn't answer because I didn't know. And then I went back to my unit, well, back to Southend-on-Sea. Within a few days, we were all going to move out. But I was told to stay behind. The rest of the lads went wherever they went. Some went to the glider regiment, and some went out to Germany. I was stationed. I was staying there. I was then sent up somewhere in Surrey, with transit camp. From the transit camp, I was then taken to an airfield. And I just couldn't imagine what it was all about. But we were all lads, or soldiers, who were of German or Austrian nationals. And we were flown to Brussels in this cold York airplane. And it was freezing cold upstairs in this airplane. We landed in Brussels and were taken to a holding unit at Dendermonde. Dendermonde, D-E-N-D-E-R-M-O-N-D, it's a Belgian name, which is in Flanders, Dendermonde. They speak German there and French and Belgian, you know. And whilst there, we waited and different things happened, and all of a sudden some of us were informed we're going to Brussels to the interpreter school. Again, I was the youngest person on the course. I was only just about 17 and a half, 18. It was then getting on towards V-Day, Britannia Day. I was on this interpreter course, and we all passed out. In fact, I even learned at my age to ride a motorbike. They asked me whether I wanted to drive or we all opted for riding a motorbike. So we went out on every day. We went out for 2 or 3 hours, but we also sat in the classroom doing exercises on interpreting translations.
Can you remember the gist of that? You know, the sort of method?
Yes. Some of those interrogation work. Some of it was as a court interpreter. Now, when you're court interpreter, you got to stand there and you listen to a person talk. You've got to stop them because the brain will only absorb so much, and you've got to, at the same time, be rather quick thinking to be able to translate into English or vice versa what the person has said. Now, unfortunately, I came a cropper. In Vienna, for potato, in German it's Kartoffel. In Vienna we call it Erdäpfel, apple of the earth. Now, whilst I was in Germany, I was at Lippstadt, doing this, I was in court. And unfortunately, I had an awful argument with the German solicitor. Because I translated, instead of saying Kartoffel, which is the German word for potato, I said Erdäpfel, which is the Austrian for potato. And he, although he knew what it was, I think because of what we were, he wanted to be awkward. And I thought to myself, so and so. words which cannot describe how I felt at that time to meet the German people. Yes, I was trying to be polite as a young man, but I hated them. I hated them so much that I just... Well, there are no words to describe this kind of feeling. I think the only way the only person who can describe this maybe of somebody else who's had some kind of his family's been injured or something or other, or beaten up, and they can maybe able to, but I cannot describe it. They're not sufficient words in my vocabulary anyway. Going back, we had these exams in Brussels. Some of them that were full corporals were made up of sergeants. Those that were made, that were Lance Corporals when they came there, were made up of corporals. I was the only private amongst them, and I got made up to Lance Corporal. But, never mind, I got paid for it, and we were explained, in fact, it was a protection rank. So, in my wisdom, or in my joking away, which at the time I had a bit of a sense, I was getting a bit of a sense of humor, I said to the sergeant who was leaving it out, I said, well, why am I only a Lance Corporal? That's not much protection. If I had two stripes, I'd have double the protection. Ah, then it was explained to me. Because the others had been on an NCO course. I never had been. So I was made up to Lance Corporal. The day came when we all moved down to Germany. We asked where we would like to be stationed. We were given a choice. I didn't know nothing about Germany, so I said, well, any military government establishment. So I was sent to 1029 military government establishment, Lippstadt.
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 Lippstadt, right.
I worked with a Captain Scobie, who was a Scotsman. Whilst there with him, the work was very interesting. I was sent away down to Belsen for some reason. Why, I don't know what happened, but the sights I saw, I thought, well, it brought me back to reality. I was getting over the incident. I thought, yes, I'm in Germany, I can now do him some harm. But when I saw all this, I thought, well, did my mother and father finish off like this? My mind was in a turmoil. I came back to Lippstadt. That's right, I remember now I had to go down to do some, the tanks were down there, the first tanks. And someone had had an accident. Now, Lippstadt is a long way from Belsen, but why I was sent down there to do the interpreting, there was a post-mortem I had to translate about an accident. Now, why I had to do it or not, I don't know. Things, I think, became a little bit clearer later on, as it became more in the service, about 18 months later, or a year later.
What was happening at Belsen when you went in? Well, what was the state of it?
The state of Belsen itself, as I said, it's so horrendous. There were mass graves there. Bodies were all over the place. You saw that these skeletons walking about. You saw young children crawling about like a skeleton on the hands and knees. And I remember coming home on my first leave, and I sat in the cinema. And on the news reel, they were showing pictures about Belsen, about Dachau, the different places. And I heard somebody behind me saying, this is just a lot of propaganda by our people. This isn't really happening. My heart churned, my mind. how I kept my tongue still, I don't know. I felt like I wanted to say something, but because I was in uniform, and if I started any kind of trouble, I would have been in serious trouble myself. So I thought it was best to put my tongue and keep quiet. But as I walked out, I gave a parting shot at these people. I couldn't see anyone or how old they were. And I said to them, if you were with a bloody uniform, and excuse my language, and served in the army, you would see what is happening out there, and then you wouldn't think it is propaganda. And one of them turned around and said, I am a conscientious objector. So I just put my hat on and walked out. But it is one of the little incidences that is in the back of my mind all the time, because it is a thing that has happened. And I think even today, there is still a lot of disbelief about what has happened. I think, if I may go ahead a little bit, because the film that was made by...
Oh, Spielberg.
Yeah, by Spielberg.
Yes, Schindler's List. Yeah. Are you thinking of? Yes.
I feel because this film that was made by Spielberg, Schindler's List, and which is now shown even in the school as part of the educational curriculum in Germany, I think people now begin to realise, 50 years on, which is a hard way, a long way at times to be done, persuade people. It really happened. But at last, they are coming to their senses and realizing that. And if I may say one more thing on this, why did we let it happen in Bosnia? There must be so many people there who feel the same way about as I do. Maybe they didn't have a concentration camp as such, but they still exterminated people that don't ethnic cleansing, which would have never happened. I think instead of making a silly excuse like they're doing at the moment, we haven't got the authority, they should give them the authority and go in there and get these people, this general and whatever, to bring them to trial. That's... Anyway, we go back. I went back to Lippstadt and I worked with this Captain Scobie, and unfortunately there was an awful lot of black marketing going on, and we caught two officers who were at the Service Corps base, the Royal Army Service Corps base, and they were stealing rations, and to have a good lot of sex life with a couple of foreigners, they were giving them rations and living up in his hotel. Captain Scobie and I had to go in without them realising who we were, and we had to, when we saw these officers coming and going into this room, we followed them, walked in, and this officer turned around, one of these was a major, and he turned around and said, who the hell do you think you are walking in here? And Captain Scobie, who was an ex-Scotland Yard person, showed his identification, searched the room, and placed them both under arrest. They were both later cashiered and dismissed the service. I think, yes, although I hated the German people, I feel to try and bribe them to have sex, if that's the only way a person can get sex, especially when there was no fraternization ban on, I think as an officer who should have set the example, I think this was wrong, very wrong. From there, I was then posted to a place in Soest, where the big world penitentiary is.
Soest?
Yeah.
S-O-E-S-T.
Soest. It was a big world penitentiary where all the war criminals went to. I first went to that place after, while I was in Lippstadt, Captain Scobie and I interviewed a man who wanted a job of Chief of Police of Lippstadt. Now, I don't know whether it's a known fact, but every government establishment in Germany had what they call a black list book. It was a black book. I don't know if you've ever heard of this, but there was a book where all the persons who committed any kind of war crimes were listed in it. Now, when this man came to see us, he gave us his name and everything else, and we saw Captain Scobie looked at me, I knew what he wanted. I went out into the office, I looked under the alphabetical order, and I found his name. He was wanted. At the time, we couldn't do much, but we kept him under observation, but somehow he slipped the net. We both went down to Trieste, because he was arrested down there by the military police. We fetched him back to Germany. I then took him to Soest, where he was tried, and I presume later, I don't know whether he went to prison or he was executed. But a lot of the war criminals, whatever category they were, I don't know, were executed there, because very often we heard the shots.
Were you still feeling this hatred towards the Germans?
Not now, no, because you see, I've got to bear in mind, my brother lived in Germany, he married a German, my grandma, my nephew is a German, my niece is a German, that my brother's brother-in-law, God forgive me, he was an SS man, but because my brother was married to his wife's sister, I've had to make him, much to my dismay, welcome in my home, because he came over to see me, and I've had to be polite to him. This is one of these, would you call it, misfortunes of war. Going on to that note, I'll be quite honest. On reflection, I've said this so many times, how can you condemn a whole nation forever for what a few murderous gangsters, call them what you like, default priests, have done? Since having been stationed in Germany and listened to a lot of the people, although I had my own doubts at the time, I know it has happened because I saw it, where they were forced to be members of some kind of the Nazi party, whether it be a National Socialist Party, or whether it be the Bund Deutsches Mädchen, what they call the German girls, the Hitler Youth. Some of them had to do it because it meant if they didn't, they were either arrested, sent to prison camp, or Belsen, or concentration camp, whatever. You can't condemn a whole nation for what? Yes, some of them did enjoy what they have done, beating people up. But then, I think you get it in all walks of life. Don't you think so? Anyway, when I was at Soest, I was then sent back to England, and I met a young lady. I got infatuated with her. I thought it was love at the time, but I was infatuated. Because I was under 21, I had to go and see Miss Eileen Baggett at the committee to get her permission to marry. She tried to warn me off, but one of these things. We're all stubborn at our young age, and I did the whole thing. I married a girl. Because I married her, we got some coupons to buy furniture with. I set up a flat with her. I went back to Germany. I wrote to her, got no answers. I came back to England on leave. I tried to find her, and she had disappeared. That was the end of my married life. Short and sweet. You've seen the bit on the films, now you hear it, it really happened. But when she realized that I had stopped her allowance, because she knew my name, my rank, and she had my regimental number, she had put a claim in to get marriage allowance. Because I was legally married to her, I had to pay. Anyway, in the end, she had a child, which I presume was by me. I maintained her till I came out of the army, and I stopped it. Now, this is just a brief respite of what happened till I got married, because it's too, you know what I mean. I came out of the army, I went into the mines in Doncaster as a miner. I didn't like it. I was still on my invocation, on my demob leave. So I rejoined. Because I was stubborn, I wouldn't go back in the army. I went into the Royal Air Force. I did 5 years in the Royal Air Force, but I met my wife. I got divorced from my first wife because when I came out, when I met my second wife, Peggy, I divorced my first wife. I then stopped paying her any money because I had to maintain Peggy. The court made an order against me for 10 and 6 to maintain the son. Danny Boy, Danny his name was, yes. To maintain Danny, which I paid 10 and 6 a week. And that was the end of it. A past episode, she took me to court once or twice, but gone past, finished over. I married my wife, to whom I've been happily married with. We've got 6 children. Whilst in the Air Force, I was lucky enough, I went into it as a nursing orderly. I was lucky enough to obtain the rank of a corporal. I went back to Germany. I was posted to a hospital called Winter, Area Winter. I was there for a period of time. Whilst there, unfortunately, I got rheumatic fever, which left me with a weak heart. I got posted back to England. I got evacuated back to England on the casualty back. Went to Arif Orton Hospital. From there I came out. I went to Arif Nene. What can I say? I enjoyed my service life. But I could never sign on. I wanted to sign on because I had rheumatic fever. I was downgraded to A4G4 and I had to come out of the Air Force.
How did you find, you know, was it given, you know, the disruption of your life and what had happened and the way you continued to mourn for your family? When you were in Germany, did you attempt to find them?
Yes, I was going to tell you that actually. Sorry, I missed a part out. I got married in 1951. Soon after I got married, by sheer chance, I got posted to Vienna, to an RAF station called Schwechat. It is now a civil airport. Now, that was the only RAF station in the Russian sector. Now, when we wanted to go into Vienna, we had to go by coach through the checkpoint into Vienna. Now, were my mother and grandfather, my mother's father, plus my father's father, there are two, it's called a central cemetery. One part is for Jews only, one part is for other religion. Now, I was lucky. I dropped off the coach when I got near the cemetery and I went to see my mother's grave. I was believe you me, I cannot describe the feeling I had. I saw my mother's grave. I knew my grandfather had died because grandmother had written to me whilst she was in France, before she went to South America. So I got the number of the grave and I went to see her. I was in Vienna since. I've got a letter here from the commission that deals with the graves. Apparently, after a certain period of time, they dig the graves up again. They're no longer in existence. I saw my grandfather's father's grave because one of the things, I don't know if you've heard this before, if somebody's been to visit, instead of taking flowers, they put stone on the grave. And I always remember, I went there to all my stones. But when I was there as a young child, I saw some stones. So I went there and put some stones on the grave to let him know. Now, whether the grave is still in existence today, I don't think so. For some unknown reason, after a period of time, they dig up the graves. Why, I don't know. Were they supposed to make room for more people? Anyway, whilst in Vienna, I went to Ellerstrasse, the place I used to live. I saw one of the two of the people that I grew up with. They were surprised to see me because I was in a English uniform. I had a corpus tape on. I was very pleased. They saw me. But on the way down, and unfortunately again, I blame my brother. He again kept a lot of things back from me in later life when I saw him. As I go along the road from the Praterstern to go down to where we used to live, mother's side of the family is her father's brother had a radio shop opposite the Prater. Now, I didn't know this when I was in Vienna in 51 because he was still alive there. He died soon after that of Parkinson's disease. Now, it's a pity, really. If my brother told me his radio shop was there, in fact, it's my own fault as well because the shop had his name on, Hugo Weiss, and I didn't realize. If I'd known, I could have gone. If I'd realized it, I could have gone in. His wife and son, Richard, who is still alive, lived around the corner. So, again, I missed that. But, bearing in mind, I couldn't stay too long because that part of Vienna was in the Russian sector. And I had to be out the sector by 9 o'clock. Now, this particular evening, whilst I was there, I was a few minutes late getting out of the sector. I had to lock myself in a telephone kiosk. Dialed the international police, which was French, German, Russian, and English. They came in a jeep to pick me up. There was 3 Russian soldiers there trying to arrest me. But when the international police came, they disappeared. And I was taken out because I had my international pass. Because when you're in Vienna, you have a photo, and in the language English, French, and Russian. Was your name and everything else printed, who you were. But if you were over the curfew time, they were entitled to arrest you. But when I explained to them, they must have radioed through the land, but this jeep came out with the two tones and wire, and I got out. I was lucky.